two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Dave and Degenovic, a new conversation.
All right, here we go.
On KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Ooh, with all this spending that's been going on over Black Friday and now Cyber Monday, I woke up this morning, I'm like, why is the Dow down? Why are the Dow futures down? The Dow is down almost 250 points right now. You know why, Dave?
I'm guessing something that's happening in
China.
A while.
The protests in China are having an impact this morning on our stock market here. We're going to talk about that.
They've just had massive protests because, again, they're still moving forward on this zero COVID policy where they just lock people down and people are not having it this time around. And I've never, Debbie, in my life, I haven't seen protests like this. I don't remember Tiananmen Square very well. Obviously, that was massive, but these are huge, and it's affecting our markets here.
Let's get into it.
It's 9:07. It's time for the launch.
Sequence engaged.
Here are three things that Debbie wants you to know.
Countdown. Three.
Black Friday spending. Congratulations, folks. It was off the charts. Cyber Monday spending expected to be off the charts. It's setting all kinds of records, David. So I guess we're not so concerned about the economy, inflation, and our pocketbooks after all. Too bad Republicans didn't know this before the midterm elections. Maybe Black Friday explains why there really was never a red wave in Congress.
Oh, I'm not buying this at all, Deb. I think we just don't care about credit cards. We do not care about credit cards. And when we see a great deal, and there are a lot of great deals out there, swipe it, baby. Swipe that credit card.
Countdown to...
A warning to Democrats. You may be stuck with President Joe Biden as your candidate in 2024. California Governor Gavin Newsom made what I thought this was an astonishing announcement. He's given the president his word he won't challenge him if he runs again. So at 9:20, we're going to dive into a live conversation with an LA Times reporter who tracks Governor Newsom's politics. I wonder if he's surprised about what Newsom said, as I am.
There's got to be more to this story, and I'm excited to talk to the LA Times about this because there is no way they believe this. There's no way that he's not running in 2024. Is there a little quid pro quo? Like where he says, I'm not going to challenge you, but if you don't run, I want your endorsement. There's got to be more to this.
Launch countdown one.
The U.S. stock market, swift reaction this morning to what is going on in China. Let me check real quick. Dow's down 266 points now. Beijing's zero-tolerance COVID lockdown policies are at the center of an uproar. I think it looks like thousands of people taking to the streets and even calling for China's president to resign. The people there, Dave, they're fighting back.
Yeah, the people are fighting back. What I'm concerned with is what China's response is going to be, because it's already been brutal. It has been so authoritarian with this zero COVID policy. What's going to happen to those that are fighting back?
Dave and Degenovic.
The launch.
Commence.
We're continuing to track that developing story. The Tim and Amanda were reporting out of the gates this morning, right out of Beijing, Shanghai, and beyond. Chinese people, Dave, sick of the country's zero-tolerance COVID policies. They're rising up, and this is rare, and it is dangerous for them.
Well, something that I did not expect to see, and these videos are starting to come out, right? We are seeing chairs and barricades being thrown at police officers. I have not seen that before in China, especially regarding COVID.
Here's how it began. Here's how it started. It was last week. Protesters believe that COVID lockdowns delayed firefighters, Dave. It just takes one incident, right? It takes one moment in time for people to say enough is enough. So they think that firefighters could not reach a burning apartment building. 10 people died in that fire. That city was in lockdown for 100 days. So many people forced to stay home. And they believe that because of lockdowns, firefighters could not get to the scene of that fire fast enough.
Well, and the zero COVID policy is so much different than when China originally instituted it. The original version, and I saw this from a New York Times article, the new version of COVID, the latest variation, is something like 175 times more contagious than the original COVID. So you can't keep COVID out right now. And China is getting hit and hit hard.
In a moment, I'll talk about the case numbers and what that zero tolerance policy actually means in the eyes of the regime. But the rest of the world has moved on from COVID, right? I mean, when's the last time you saw a mask in a store? I saw one this weekend, a mask in a store. And I'm like, oh, yeah, we're still in a pandemic. But not China. At least not the leader, not the president of China. So let's move to Shanghai on Saturday. Protesters held up white pieces of paper, which is a protest to protest what they call censorship. And they were chanting that they want human rights. They need freedom. And now there are cries for their president, President Xi, to step down. And they're clashing with police. And CNN's Selena Wang says this is super risky for people in China to do this.
And in China, it is extremely dangerous to publicly criticize the party, especially Xi himself. You risk prison time or even worse. Some protesters also chanted they don't want COVID tests, they don't want dictatorship, they want freedom and democracy.
None of this is going over well. It won't go over well today, tomorrow, as long as President Xi is still in power, which it seems like he will be in power as long as he wants, as long as he chooses to. This puts the people at incredible danger.
So is it wild for me to think, is this the beginning of the end for him? Is this the beginning? Are there enough people protesting that this will be what it takes to overthrow their government? We're going to ask that of an expert at 11:05 in our 11 o'clock hour. Because come on, aren't we all thinking that, Dave?
Yeah. I mean, China has more than a billion people in that country. Like, they could rise up tomorrow. But in brutal dictatorships, what do you do? What can you do? Because his response could be so brutal and so violent, and we may never know the degree of how brutal and violent it might be.
Yeah.
That's what's scary about it. And yeah, do dictators topple? Yeah, sometimes. Sometimes the people rise up. This would have to be on a scale almost unimaginable.
So let's talk about, for the next few seconds here, what China's lockdowns have looked like. Have you ever heard of closed loop management? Yeah, I'm not kidding you. I read this morning on the Associated Press. They've been using this where factory workers live in the factories. So it's closed loop management of the disease. You live in the factory without any outside contact. How would that be if you had to live in the newsroom?
Yikes.
Also, they went on this new wave of lockdowns. It was last week. You got to stay home. Starting for 5 days, beginning last week, except to buy food or get medical treatment, you got to stay home. And the zero tolerance COVID policy, Dave, is actually a call for cases to be at or near zero. So zero tolerance is more about the disease. It's they want to keep these cases at or near zero. To your point, that might have been okay, something they could do in the beginning. But with this new strain, it is so contagious. Yesterday, they had 38,000 cases in China. 38,000.
Well, that sounds like a lot. Again, Debbie, we're talking about 3 to 4 times the size of the United States.
But it's nowhere near zero.
Yeah.
So how antiquated are these zero tolerance COVID policies?
Yeah, impossible.
I think that's why.
You have to admit you're wrong. President Xi will never admit he's wrong.
Straight ahead, a warning to Democrats. You may be stuck with President Joe Biden as your new candidate in 2024. Because California Governor Gavin Newsom has made it clear, if Joe runs, he's not going to run. We're going to have a conversation live with an LA Times reporter who tracks Governor Newsom's politics next.
Dave and Dujanovic. Get a quick blast of news each morning.
From Ukraine to Utah County.
You'll hear it first.
And accurately.
On KSL.
Listen weekdays between 5 and 9 to Tim and Amanda.
Utah's morning companions. Dave and Dujanovic. The country's top story on politics. Special coverage with David Dujanovic.
We're going to talk about Gavin Newsom, governor of California. This summer, the New York Times, in a survey, found some 94% of Democrats, now these are folks under the age of 30, want a different presidential nominee. But
our intention is to run again. That's been our intention. And my guess is it'd be early next year we make that judgment.
All right. President Biden leaving the door open to not running in 2024, right?
Yeah. If you want to make it simple, you say, absolutely, I'm running. No question. Yeah, I'm running. That's how you quell any of this conversation. But he doesn't. He said, oh, we're going to discuss it as a family and make this decision on our own. So if he doesn't run, who's going to step up? Are we talking the usual suspects? Is this Bernie Sanders? Are you feeling the burn, Deb?
Elizabeth.
Elizabeth Warren.
Kamala. One of the hottest names in the Democratic Party, California Governor Gavin Newsom. Hate to burst your bubble, Dems. Newsom says he gave President Biden his word. He won't challenge him for the Democratic nomination if Biden runs in 2024.
Yeah. If he runs, I'm not buying this whole, no, I'm all for President Biden. This is like the owner of a team telling his coach, like, your job is totally safe, and then you're fired the next day. Like, I don't buy that Gavin Newsom, Governor Newsom, is just going to sit back in the wings. 72% of Americans, this is Republicans, Democrats, Independents, don't want Biden to run. That was a Marquette poll out of that university. Nobody wants Biden to run again, not even his own party. So Newsom is the guy, even if he's pretending he's not.
Let's bring LA Times reporter Phil Will on. I hope I said that right, Phil.
You did. Thank you. Great to be here.
Well, we got word this morning from one of our producers that you track Governor Newsom, his politics and politics in California. So thanks for joining us on this week, on this Cyber Monday, the week after Thanksgiving. What do you make of this Newsom announcement that he won't challenge the president for the nomination in 2024?
Oh, he's been saying this for months. And, I mean, you can believe him or not, he's a politician. So, I mean, you know, but, I mean, he has been consistent saying he won't run. And to be honest, he kind of has his hands full in California. I mean, in my opinion, he is more set up to run in 2028. He'll, of course, between then and now, he'll have to do a lot of stuff in California to kind of right the ship as far as homelessness and the economy and everything like that. But I just right now, I mean, I don't make predictions because, you know, I'm not, you know, clairvoyant. And so, but right at this point, I don't think that he would run in 2024. Now, if Biden decides not to run, because what, he's 80, right?
Yeah.
So if he decides not to run, then I mean, who knows? I mean, Newsom has said even if Biden doesn't run, he won't run. But as you just said in your lead up, I mean, if people and, you know, kind of draft him to run, who knows? They'll say, well, I was reluctant, but they wanted me to run or something like that. But like I said, at this point, from my vantage point, I would say he won't run in 2024.
The bench for the Democrats is not a particularly strong bench. There isn't an heir apparent. The one that you'd kind of assume as, you know, a former senator from your state, Kamala Harris, you would think that she would just naturally be the heir apparent, but that just does not seem to be the case. From your perspective, maybe let's speak to the former senator of your state, why doesn't she resonate? Why isn't she the heir apparent?
Well, I think people look at, 2020 and how did she do when she ran for president? And she didn't do that well. I mean, she came out really strong and with a strong lead, but then kind of faded in the stretch. You know what I mean? So I think people look at that and say, well, is she a realistic candidate for the party? Can she win some of these swing states, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Georgia, Nevada, Arizona? I mean, could she pull off what Biden did? And I think there are questions about that because, again, you just look at her past record running for president, and she didn't do that well. Second time around, I mean, people have proven it before, Republicans and Democrats. The first time around, they kind of flame out. Second time around, they kind of a little more seasoned and know what to do and get kind of a different crew to run their campaign. So who knows? And like I said, only clairvoyants and idiots make political predictions, and I'm not clairvoyant.
Well, we're a bunch of idiots. We're making predictions left and right.
You are a comedian, though, Phil. Phil Willon is LA Times reporter. He covers California politics, also tracks Governor Gavin Newsom. And Dave and I are glad to have him on the line today because we read an article over the weekend that suggested that he has told, Newsom has given President Biden his word that he won't challenge him if he runs in 2024. You alluded earlier in the conversation, Phil, to homelessness and that the governor there has a lot on his plate. Can't help but miss the stories about the homeless issue, people experiencing homelessness on the streets there in California and also crime. So what are some of Newsom's politics that you think our listeners should be aware of and familiar with?
Well, I mean, he was elected to a second term in November. So, I mean, the first term, like a lot of governors, including your governor, I mean, is basically the time when they make a lot of promises and get a lot of bills passed. And the second term is when they actually have to show results and implement the policies that are in place now. And so the state has spent a lot of money on homelessness, including during the pandemic, I mean, to get people off the streets. And has gotten a lot of people off the streets, to be honest. But, I mean, they've been replaced by other homeless people. So I think he has to, in his next term, if he has a future in politics, in running for president or whatever, he has to show results. And just like any politician, I mean, you can promise all you want, but you have to show results. And, I mean, homelessness is probably one of the number one things that people see every day. And they see the tents up on the sidewalks and the streets, and they want that. People, Californians, no matter what their politics are, they want that addressed. And there's also affordable housing. I mean, the state of California, as you know, people are moving from California to your state because of much to the displeasure of people that live there. But, I mean, just because California is so an expensive place to live. And so that that has to be addressed as well. We have to build more housing, and that's one of the primary drivers of affordability and homelessness, to be honest. I mean, the fact that, rents and homes cost so much put people kind of on the precipice of poverty and homelessness.
Phil Willon, thank you so much for joining us. If it's all right, we're going to keep your phone number because you're outstanding. I love it. LA Times reporter out of California, covers politics and specifically Gavin Newsom. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, I think Phil hit the nail on the head when he talked about Newsom proving himself in the second term. And can he address the massive issue that they have with people experiencing homelessness in California, the influx of people moving to Utah and other states in search of also not only to get away from rising crime in California, perceived or real, moving to Utah to be able to afford not only a home, but a safe place for their family to move, to grow up in.
And really, when you look at, we remember that Gavin Newsom survived a recall election.
I didn't think that was that big of a deal.
Oh, it was a huge deal.
You made a huge deal about that. I didn't think that was a big deal.
You look at how many hundreds of thousands of people turned out to sign the petition to get him recalled, and then how many people participated in the election.
But nothing came of it.
Except for the fact that he did get re- – I mean, there was a vote on this, mm-hmm. right? I mean, it's one thing if you're just sailing by and nobody, you know, you just have a few people in the, yeah, in the wings.
But politics isn't what happened yesterday. Politics is what have you done for me lately? What have you done for me today? And if this if the governor can't get his arms wrapped around the homeless situation in California, which is – Phil put it well. You've been to California lately. You've probably seen it there. And these folks need a place to stay, to live, to you know, improve their lives, and just the tent cities that go on and on. I mean, we have the same thing in our downtown area.
Except it's not 74 degrees year round.
True.
This is what California deals with. We have like 4 good months out of the year.
So if not Newsom, then who? Who do you think, Dave?
I mean, it's got to be Kamala, right? I mean, it's got to be the vice president. Except there's no way it's Kamala Harris.
She's supposed to be the heir apparent. Let's just say she stumbled along the way, struggling to communicate her messages.
Talking about the significance of the passage of time, right? The significance of the passage of time. So when you think about it, there is great significance to the passage of time.
So yikes.
If not President Biden, if not California Governor Gavin Newsom, in your mind, is it Vice President Kamala Harris who is the heir apparent for the Oval Office? Let's take your phone calls. 801-575-TALK.
801-575. Dave and DeGenevic. A new conversation.
All right, here we go.
On KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM. The country's top story on politics. Special coverage with David DeGenevic.
Is it Kamala? Is she the heir apparent to the White House? 801-575-TALK. We're going to take your live phone calls. We've already got people calling in, so just hang on one second. President Biden saying he's going to run for president. Has he really said that, though?
Yeah, it's his intention. I love that word. Okay. It's my intention to run.
Let's listen.
My judgment of running when I announce, if I announce, my intention is that I run again. But I'm a great respecter of fate, and this is ultimately a family decision. I think everybody wants me to run, but we're going to have discussions about it. And I don't feel in any hurry one way or another to make that judgment, okay. Today, tomorrow, or whenever.
Wow. Okay, well, they're flipping a coin at the Biden home. If not President Biden, then who?
The obvious answer, again, is Vice President Kamala Harris. Except her time as vice president has just, in part, her fault. Some of it is the fault of the administration. You know, they're like, hey, you solve immigration. Yep. You know, we're going to put you in charge of immigration.
Border crisis.
But again, she has a hard time communicating. Every time you put a microphone in front of her, she stumbles.
Which is why we will work together and continue to work together to address these issues, to tackle these challenges, and to work together as we continue to work operating from the new norms, rules, and agreements that we will convene to work together on to galvanize global action.
With that,
I thank you all. This is a matter of urgent priority for all of us, and I know we will work on this together.
Wait, who's going to work together? Oh, we're going to work together. Like, you find a catchphrase, and this is her move. She uses it 57 times in her comments.
Again, we're taking your live calls, 801-5801. I think I said 8L1. 801-575-TALK. Speaking of word salads, I'm going to mix up the numbers and see if you can get to dialing correctly. Jake, hold the line for a moment. We just talked with Phil Willon. He's an LA Times reporter. He tracks Los Angeles politics. He's an expert on Gavin Newsom, who, by the way, I thought he just said he won't be challenging President Biden if Biden runs again. But Phil told us, oh, he's been saying that for months. And then you asked a great question. Why isn't Kamala Harris, who was a former senator from California, why isn't she the heir apparent for the Democratic nomination for president?
Well, I think people look at, you know, 2020 and how did she do when she ran for president? And she didn't do that well. I mean, she came out really strong and with a strong lead, but then kind of faded in the stretch. You know what I mean? So I think people look at that and say, well, is she a realistic candidate for the party? Can she win some of these swing states, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Georgia, Nevada, Arizona? I mean, could she pull off what Biden did?
We're taking your phone calls, 801-575-TALK. Let's jump out to Jake in Magna. What do you think about the vice president? If it's not Biden, then why isn't it Kamala Harris?
Well, looking at the vice president, I would agree that just her ability to communicate has been a very big deterrent as far as seeing her as a favorable candidate. And by nature of her, you know, needing to take responsibility for things such as the border control, and to the point that the state of Texas has now had to issue, you know, a standard of invasion in order to put up formidable forces to hold off all the people coming in, kind of shows the lack of action she takes in her role as the vice president. And, you know, if we think about some of the inaction of the current administration, the thing that a lot of people don't want is more of the same. And I think a lot of people are fearful of that. And with Biden kind of having the lack of communication to the media, you know, does Kamala Harris really exert more of the same in that regard as well?
That's a good point. Thanks, Jake, for the phone call. I think communication, this is something that you will consistently hear when we're talking about criticism. Communicating from this administration is just very clumsy. Obviously, we know that President Biden is not a great public speaker, but Kamala Harris, again, you heard some of that word salad. We're going to work together by working together, you know, working together.
First female vice president, right? I mean, I can't think of another one. Okay, I just want to make sure I got that right on a Monday morning. Missed opportunity. I look at that, the potential there for her to really, you know, rise up in terms of a potential future leader for the Democrats, and missed opportunity. Obviously, putting her in charge of the border crisis, which has been an issue for decades, and saying, oh, she's the one that's going to solve it. You're setting her up for failure right then and there. And then her, claims that she was going to go to the border, but she hadn't been to the border, but she wasn't really, but maybe she knows about the border. I mean, that whole thing off the beat. I wish we had that soundbite when she was
from Lester Holt.
Was it like Lester Holt's interview with her and NBC News? She hadn't even, I mean, that we knew of, hadn't even really been to the border. So, opportunity missed. But Casey, West Jordan, maybe you feel differently. Maybe she wasn't potential at all in your mind. Oh, Casey, stop hanging up on us. Let's get to Pete from Salt Lake City.
Hey, good morning, you guys.
Oh,
hey.
Pete, we haven't talked to you since last Wednesday. How was your Thanksgiving?
Kamala Harris for VP is everybody nuts. You know who would make a good VP with Donald Trump as president? Would be Ron Santos. He did good when the hurricane cruised through Florida. And I think he would do a good good VP for the president. Those two would be a good pair.
We're talking about, thanks, Pete, we're talking about the Democratic ticket. We're talking about who's the heir apparent for the Democrat Party. And I know you want to talk Republicans right now, but how about this? One of our texters at 57500, Pete Buttigieg.
Mayor Pete.
Where is he on your list of heir apparents, David?
Yeah, it's interesting because he's the Secretary of Transportation right now. He's obviously an up-and-comer. I don't know if he motivates, you know, the entire base of the Democratic Party. I don't know if people are really getting excited over Mayor Pete. Somebody's got to step up. And some of the big names, big fundraisers that you've seen, Beto O'Rourke, he's a huge fundraiser. Stacey Abrams, they just both lost in there. They're running for governor in Texas and running for governor in Georgia. Mm-hmm. They got stomped. So, again, you're looking at the bench. You're trying to find out who's the heir apparent. Who's the next person? There should be several. And quite honestly, there's just not many.
Hmm.
But Gavin Newsom is definitely on that list, probably up at the top of that list. So when he says he's not going to run for 2024 against Biden, that's big news.
Let's shift our political focus back to Salt Lake County. Let's go local. Did you hear how much money was spent on the Salt Lake County Council race to win that one seat?
This was shocking.
Yeah. Oh, let's wait. Let's tell everybody how much was spent in 4 minutes.
Dave and Dujanovic.
Start your mornings productively with important updates on breaking news,
traffic, and reliable weather.
You'll get it all on KSL from 5 to 9 with Tim and Amanda.
Utah's morning companions for news.
I've talked KSL News Radio.
Dave and Dujanovic. Utah's top story on politics. Special coverage with David Dujanovic.
In the spirit of holiday spending, let's talk about this spendy race in Salt Lake County. You know, Salt Lake County has a council. I know we know that, right? So this became the county's most expensive race ever. We're going to dive into this article in the Salt Lake Tribune, and then we're going to get our political reporter, Lindsay Ayers, in on the conversation as well. So Councilwoman-elect Suzanne Harrison raised over $450,000. And she beat Republican Richard Snellgrove. I don't know how long Snellgrove had the seat, but he was an incumbent, meaning he's been there more than a minute. And he put up
$55,000. $55,000. I mean,
to $450,000.
Nearly 10 times more money was raised by his challenger.
Yeah.
$450,000, Debbie, for a city or a county council race.
$500,000, which when I heard that number between the two of them, I thought that's the cost of a home now. So basically they spent between the two of them or raised enough between the two of them to cover the cost of the average home in Salt Lake County. I don't know why that number came to my mind, but I'm like, that's a boatload of money for a county council race. And it also worries me, like, where is the ceiling on that?
Yeah. No, that's exactly where my mind went. If it's going to cost $500,000 to win a county council race. And again, this wasn't one of those races that led to a sea change. I think this kind of moves the county council a little bit more to the Democrat side. I think it's now 5-4 versus 6-3. What I'm saying is this is going to change everything on the council kind of race. And it cost nearly $500,000.
Lindsay Ayers, KSL News Radio's political reporter. You covered midterms. And I think this is fascinating, Linz. I mean, she ends up outpacing Snellgrove in votes by 10% and clearly raises significant amount more than he did. But maybe he didn't need that much. He felt like he was the incumbent and he had this thing in the bag.
Yeah, perhaps that could be part of it. But I think what this money spending really shows is how important this seat was to Democrats in Salt Lake County. This is the at-large seat. So this person represents the entire county on the council. And so it really shows how much Democrats in the county wanted to erase the Republican supermajority on the council. So, well, Dave, you're right that it doesn't, you know, significantly upend the makeup of the council. It does give Democrats another seat on the council. And also there's a Democratic mayor with Jenny Wilson. So it gives Democrats a little bit more of a voice. And I do think this money just shows how significant this seat was to Democrats in Salt Lake County, because not only does the makeup move a little bit, you know, more purple, if mm-hmm. you will, but if it had stayed 6-3, the Republicans would have had a super majority there. And also the new member, the new Republican on the council, Sheldon Stewart, is seen as a lot more conservative than Steve DeBry, who he beat out in convention. So there was some concern that the council would stay very conservative with that 6-3 majority. And so I think the combination of that with Suzanne Harrison as a moderate Democrat, her targeting, her messaging, all coupled with just the right timing and the right play for Democrats to pick up this seat.
Lindsay, what happened with Richard Snellgrove? Was he unable or just unmotivated? Or what is that $55,000 that he raised? What does that say?
Well, it's hard to really know. I haven't spoken with him, so I haven't really gotten a sense from him on what he thinks, you know, it says. You know, just looking broadly and from the outside in, perhaps he was relying on name recognition. He served on the council for, I believe, 18 years. Perhaps, you know, he had a lot of signs up around Salt Lake County. But the thing Suzanne Harrison really did well was targeting social media and targeting online digital messaging. And perhaps that was a block of voters that she really needed to get. If you're going to win in Utah, you have to be able to persuade some independent and more moderate Republican voters. So perhaps her targeting of social media, and we live in a digital world, right? So her digital marketing allowed her to target those voters who perhaps were seeing her message more because of where they exist.
Well, and some people might be thinking, well, social media, posting to Facebook or Instagram, does anybody use Snapchat? I don't, but maybe some do. It's free, but it really isn't free because you have to pay if you want to boost your advertising or whatever you're posting into people's feeds. That can cost money, and I'm sure that adds up for campaigns. And if those ads are well placed and targeted, they're spending money to make sure it's getting to seen by the right eyes, and so people are swayed one way or the other. But I got to tell you, when I look back on this race, and I think about, you said Snellgrove had that seat for 18 years. I'm like, wow. I mean, 18 years goes really fast. I didn't realize he'd been in that long, but I didn't see that many Richard Snellgrove signs. And even if I did, I'm driving at 55 miles an hour, you know, down a freeway, or 60 miles an hour. But Suzanne Harrison had a lot of digital billboards that I saw with her face right on them, Linz. And it's really the first, that was my only comparison between the two and how they ran that race, is I saw her. I did not see his signs.
Yeah, and maybe it's just where I live. I felt like I saw a lot of his signs. So it's interesting. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, political strategists and political scientists are much smarter at this than I am. But I don't know how effective just, you know, your campaign sign on the side of the freeway is.
Right.
Clearly, there's some name recognition. Clearly, her face was on some of her signs. But I think, you know, that social media marketing is really important in a campaign, and especially in a campaign where you're trying to win some of those more independent and moderate voters. You know, you can target people on social media. Every action we take on the internet, on Google, gives a digital map, if you will, of what we're into, what our interests are. And so you can target that as an advertiser and as a campaigner, right? And so clearly that was one strategy, along with the messaging from, you know, not to take away anything from Suzanne Harrison and what she wants to try to do. But I do think in politics, especially local races here and the makeup of our state, there's just such a timing to politics, right? There's just such a timing to the right candidate, the right message, with what's on the ballot, with what's at stake. It all kind of plays into winning races.
Lindsay Ertz, thank you for joining us. And it really was a fascinating candidate, right? Suzanne Harrison served in the Utah legislature, went for this county council spot because she got redistricted out of her seat. So she decided to run for the county council spot. How that's going to affect the legislature and the Democratic caucus up there, we'll see. But it's a big win, and she spent a lot of money to do it.
So $500,000 raised. Does this scare you?
Oh, yeah.
If you were thinking about running, and I know you're not because you got a great job, but I look at that number and I think six figures times five is what you've got to raise.
Yeah, that's a lot of phone calls.
For a local seat.
Yeah, that can be extremely intimidating.
I think so. Yeah.
If that's the new standard.
Yeah.
Then
the bar's pretty high.
Wow, that's a high bar.
So a contingent of Utah politicians, I found out this, they recently traveled to Florida. And I thought, well, they must be going to survey the damage left behind by Hurricane Ian. Why? Uh-uh. They went to see how Florida is addressing what really is a nationwide issue of homelessness. We're going to have that conversation.
Dave and Dejanovic, a new conversation.
All right, here we go.
On KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM at 1160 AM.
And I found out that it was a contingent of Utah politicians, Dave, who recently went to Florida Not to survey the damage left behind by Hurricane Ian, which I thought, okay, well, that's why would they do that? No, my ears actually perked up because they went there to see how the state is addressing what I think is becoming a nationwide issue of homelessness.
Yeah, Florida, California, they are unique because the weather, aside from hurricanes, right, and earthquakes in California, the weather is spectacular. The homelessness issue that we have here in Utah, it's especially difficult because we have some very extreme temperatures, whether it's very, very hot in the summer or freezing cold in the winter. So I am very interested to hear if they found solutions that would work here in Utah because we have a much different climate.
So a few years ago, the downtown homeless shelter disbanded on Rio Grande, and it became multiple resource centers in the Salt Lake Valley. So I think there's three of them, and then there's some backup places for folks to go in the winter time, like converting old libraries and other places. But some would say we still have a big issue to address. This has not solved what we need to solve regarding homelessness. It may be a step in the right direction. Some say it's not. Senator Todd Weiler, State Senator Todd Weiler, you were in that contingent of politicians who flew to Florida?
Yeah. Aaron Mendenhall, I think, the mayor organized a trip, and we had the chief of police. We had Derek Miller from the Salt Lake Chamber. We had Judge Clem Landau from the Salt Lake Justice Court and a couple of legislators, myself. It was about 20 of us or maybe 24 of us. We were joined by some judges in Virginia and some other states. But, you know, Debbie, let me just start off by saying, you know, 2 decades ago, Miami, like about 15 major cities, had 10,000 homeless people. And today, every other major city has between 20 and 80,000 homeless people basically on the streets. But Miami only has 1,100. So they've gone down almost 90%, while every other city has doubled, tripled, or quadrupled, et cetera. And you guys said the state of Florida, but we're particularly looking at what Miami-Dade County did, because they are more successful than Orlando and Tallahassee and Jacksonville and some other areas of Florida. The secret sauce here, it kind of comes down to coordination. I'll tell you one thing I learned, from this trip was like Sandy City and the Justice Court judges in Sandy City here are treating homeless offenses very differently than Salt Lake City is. And we don't have kind of a uniform approach, even in the same Salt Lake County. And what we learned, we toured some other homeless facilities. It really takes a coordinated effort between the police, the courts, the mental health providers, the government that's funding it. In our case, that would be the legislature or the Salt Lake County Council. We also had Mayor Jenny Wilson there from the county and several others. But let me just tell you, in Miami, and I think Utah is very similar, before they started this, they were spending $2 million a year on misdemeanor competency evaluations. And that was almost all of their resources were trying to take the same 100 or 200 offenders and cycle them through the criminal justice system and make sure that they were competent. And there was, no money being spent really on focusing on what treatment worked for them. They actually start treating people on the street before they even get them into the shelter. When they get into the shelter, they treat these people with a lot of dignity and respect. It's very different than what I think the Utah approach has been, especially because we're not coordinating all of our efforts between the courts and the police and the mental health providers and the shelters. It all has to, everyone has to be basically singing from the same, hymnal, and not just each organization and each police department kind of doing their own policy.
This has been a criticism. This is not a new criticism for Utah and the way we've handled people experiencing homelessness. It's that there are a lot of different cooks in the kitchen. What does a consolidated, coordinated effort look like?
Well, for instance, in Miami, they had 97 people arrested 2,200 times collectively, the same 9,700 people. They spent 27,000 days collectively in jail. and 13,000 days in psychiatric facilities. That all costs a lot of money and a lot of time, and they weren't getting any results. And so we're doing that right now in Utah. We're arresting. So, Dave, if you or I got arrested or if Debbie got arrested, we would be humiliated. We would be worried about what our friends and our families think. But someone who's arrested for the 99th time versus the 98th time, that's all gone, you know. And so one of the problems I've identified is we're treating people who are chronically homeless the same, you know, as if we would treat someone on their first or second arrest. And all of those, you know, natural instincts to preserve yourself, to stay out of jail, all of those barriers are gone. These people have been through the system. They know the system probably better than some of the prosecutors do because they've been through it so many times. So first of all, is we need to stop treating these people the same as everyone else in the criminal justice. We need to divert them, in my opinion, we need to divert them immediately to mental health treatment and stop. You know, we have prosecutors in Salt Lake City, Salt Lake County, who are just prosecuting the same people for the 64th, 65th, 66th time. And it's just chewing up all of these valuable court time and resources, and we're not getting any bang for those bucks.
We only have about 60 seconds left, Senator Wyler. Is there a way we can get to these folks with mental health therapy like they are doing in Miami-Dade County when they're on the streets? Can we do a better job there?
I think we can do a better job there. And, you know, we're going to continue to meet the work group that was in Miami. This was not just a junket, you know, where we were there, you know, basking in the sun. We were like 14-hour days. It was really quick visit. But we're going to keep on meeting as a work group. We're going to meet in December and come up with some better solutions for Salt Lake County and hopefully for the state of Utah.
That'd be great.
Senator Todd Wyler, thank you for joining us, state senator. And when we're having this conversation, I think the senator touched on it, Debbie. It's very difficult, especially when you're talking about those that are chronically homeless. And that is not the majority of homeless people. Mm. Those that are chronically homeless, that are constantly in trouble with the law, that is a small percentage. I've seen numbers anywhere between 10% or less of the homeless population are really the ones, the consistent offenders that are having to be dealt with law enforcement. So, again, well, what does that intervention look like?
Yeah, but
Where do they go if it's not jail?
Look, I mean, I don't remember the exact number of arrests, but I was once tipped off to a woman who was homeless. This is about 15, 16 years ago. I was a reporter who'd been, I think it was like 80 times.
Yeah.
80 times yeah. down in downtown Salt Lake. And
they know them by first name.
Yeah, I'd have to go back and check my facts on that because it was so long ago. It was probably 2003 or 4 I found out about her. But so that one individual needs a specific kind of help. And if she's being arrested for, you know, lewdness or you know, doing something in public she shouldn't be doing, public urination, whatever, she needs a specific kind of help. And I think to Senator Todd Wyler's point, if these group of people, like what was happening in Miami-Dade County, that they saw 97 people arrested, you know, and they spent 27,000 cumulative days to get in jail, we need to address that. Because that is taking up a tremendous amount of resources. We want to get them the help. But there's a lot of other people who need that help, too. So we got to continue to follow what this group decides to do and seeing if there's anything legislatively come January and February up on the Hill where everybody comes together and gets on the same page. Straight ahead, I don't think inflation was as big as a problem as we thought it was. Holiday spending is off the charts. I'm not kidding you. It is off the charts. Let's dive into that next.
Dave and Dujanovic.
You can catch info anywhere.
But KSL News Radio is a dependable source.
We invite you to join us weekdays between 5 and 9.
Tim Hughes and Amanda Dixon.
Utah's morning companions for news.
Live.
Dave and Dujanovic. Dave and Dujanovic are right on the money on KSL News Radio.
Yeah, you ain't got any money left. Let me tell you, the spending already is so off the charts. Are you ready for this number, David?
I'm ready.
According to Adobe, which tracks all of the holiday spending, shoppers spent, and this is American shoppers. You can't look at the rest of the world and go, yeah, it's your fault. $9.12 billion online shopping during Black Friday. That is a record. Overall, online sales for Black Friday were up almost 2.5% year over year. Why, oh, why? Why, oh, why? Why?
Year over year, we're up. We've spent over $9 billion just on the Black Friday sales.
Disgusting.
Why? You're asking the question, why? Well, yeah. You think it's because...
Oh, I think we never had a problem with inflation and spending.
Stop
and to begin with, I think that was just... It was all a lot of chatter leading up to the midterms. And I think Black Friday is proof as to why we never had a red wave that was highly anticipated. Didn't really happen during the midterms. We aren't as afraid of spending as the polls made us out to be.
You don't think we're suffering with inflation, and this proves it?
No, I don't. We may be suffering, but we're willing to dismiss it.
Okay, so those are two different things, right? I think if we dismiss it and ignore it, that would explain it to me better than, you're not suffering as much as the headlines say you are. I think the alternate headline for this, Deb, is FOMO, fear of missing out. Americans don't care about what they're spending. They don't care about credit card debt because that's where it's going. It's not like Americans have these giant stacks of cash just sitting in their house. What do I do with it? No, they see a great deal. There's a fear of missing out on this great deal, so they'll put it on a credit card.
I might have done a little of that. Let's take texts on this one on our KSL text line, 57500. Did you buy something on Black Friday? And Cyber Monday counts too. So give us a quick text, 57500, if it's safe to do so. Like if you aren't busy at a computer right now trying to grab that lightning deal on Amazon, it's safe to text us, 57500. What did you buy? Come on.
I bought nothing.
What?
I got a few things in my cart, in my Amazon cart.
Nobody listening to this conversation remotely believes that you're telling the truth. You bought nothing.
Now, I can't speak for my wife, but I can tell you, I have a couple of pairs of headphones in there that I'm thinking about it. I don't know.
JBLs?
How did you know?
I don't know.
Jeez, stalker. Weirdo. How did you know there was JBL headphones? Did you just buy some?
No, I didn't.
Holy smokes. Yeah, no,
Dave, I'm
sorry, I'm a little creeped out here. I'm trying to figure out how in the world you knew exactly the kind of if you think headphones, you go, well, AirPods? Because you've seen me wear AirPods every day for the last 5 years. But you're like, JBL?
I saw. I was on the Zon. I was on Amazon this weekend, and I saw the JBL's a really good deal, and I was tempted, but I have AirPods I never wear. I never wear those doggone things, so I thought, what do you need a pair of JBLs if you never wear the one pair you have? This is what is even more – it gets wilder for me, like the turkey at the Thanksgiving table. Thanksgiving Day spending also off the charts. What are you all doing? What are you all doing? Record-breaking. This is according to CNBC article I pulled this morning. You could look at any article. It'll tell you the same thing. Record-breaking spending comes off the heels of a strong day of Thanksgiving shopping. What is going on? Like, aren't you busy watching football and eating?
Oh, yeah.
An all-time high. Americans shelled out an all-time high. Are you ready for this on Thanksgiving? $5.29 billion online. That's up almost 3% YOY, which is year over year. Typically, we spend about $2 to $3 billion online in that day, but apparently we were feeling it on Thanksgiving. Did you buy anything on Thanksgiving? You didn't even buy anything at all.
Oh, this weekend, big fat nothing. No, Deb, these numbers, it does, I think, speak a little bit to the fact that there's no longer a Black Friday. There's no longer a Cyber Monday.
This is true.
It is an entire week, entire month of great deals. Mm-hmm. And if you have a little free time, you're sitting down, surfing around.
The week before Thanksgiving, I wandered into a Walmart. This had to have been like Sunday or Saturday before Thanksgiving. The aisles were lined with Black Friday deals. And they didn't even have like police tape around them. You know, it wasn't like roped off. You can't touch. Wait until Friday morning at 5 a.m. You could scoop up whatever you wanted. It just seems so non-Black Friday-ish to me.
So different.
Today is going to be even bigger. $11.2 billion for Cyber Monday, which is today. Up 5% YOY, which we now know is year over year. Up 5%. David, this is nuts.
Yeah, I would have thought that these numbers would have been very low.
Me too.
But I've read a few articles, one in the Wall Street Journal specifically, that said part of the reason we're seeing such great deals is because supply chain issue, right? We just supply, we made so many things. There was such a demand for stuff that basically we over-manufactured. And now you have everybody trying to get rid of this inventory. So there are massive slashes. So if you're like, but this deal's too good to pass up, that is what I think we're dealing with. We're looking at deals. We're looking at things. And the deal is too good to pass up, even if we have to put it on a credit card.
I paid cash, but I bought a vacuum. And it's not just any vacuum.
Merry Christmas, Deb.
Yeah, totally. I mean, what is better than having Walmart deliver a carpet cleaning vacuum to your back door on like Black Friday? I walked out. There it was. I was so excited. I scooped it up and then I realized it didn't come with enough cleaning solution. So I ran to Walmart and I bought the cleaning solution that I needed. I have the cleanest carpets in all of Utah right now. I cleaned them twice this weekend. $99. Regular $249.
You did some Black Friday cleaning?
$99.
That's the worst weekend ever.
Black Friday and Saturday cleaning. On our text line, 57500, bought nothing fun. Just winter coats for my kids and a pair of shoes for one of my kids. This listener says, a coat for mom. And clothes for the grandchildren and sweaters for me and the spouse. And that, a lot of good deals on sweaters, that's for sure. I guess they had an overabundance of sweaters because they were all $9. They were all $9. Have you ever heard of this phrase, Dave? I'm going to throw out an acronym for you. BNPL.
No. Is that like a new government entity? You know who got arrested? You got arrested by BNPL. You know those guys. They'll crack down on you.
It's buy now, pay later. And this is all of the rage on the internet.
Isn't that called a credit card?
No, it's buy now, pay later. And it's a lot of times it's no interest. And you could spread your payments out over several months. And it is all of the rage.
Okay.
Especially online. It is not like the old layaway. It's a lot different. In the 11 o'clock hour, we're going to dive into BNPL. And I want to
M-O-U-S-E. Okay.
Dave and Dejanovic, a new conversation.
All right, here we go.
On KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM at 1160 AM.
There's been a lot of chatter online and in some articles about delays in flights. You know, it's certainly a busy travel weekend. But we just checked. I want to let our listeners know, Dave. We just checked with the Salt Lake International Airport. And they said, yesterday was a big travel day for Salt Lake City. People returning home from the Thanksgiving holiday. But today, numbers are back to average, not experiencing any delays, everything running smoothly right now at Salt Lake International. Just wanted to get that in before we talked about this flight pass I want to sell you.
Okay. Yeah. Not a big surprise that things have settled down.
Yeah.
But yeah, the numbers, I think we saw a lot of people returning to the airports, traveling around the country. We were surprised at the cost. It seemed like there was a pretty steep increase on costs, on flight costs. And I wonder how much that's going to affect people if they're just going to be priced out of flying.
Oh, okay. Well, stand by.
Fly me to the moon.
How about if I talk about this deal that I caught in an article that I read and see if I can sell you on this all-you-can-fly pass.
Stop it. All you can fly?
It's like all-you-can-eat sushi.
Like front of... Like,
but for airline travel.
It's like front runner, but in the air. You just as much as you want to go.
But here's... Well,
what's the catch? Well, there's a catch.
Well, you judge whether these are catches or not. A catch is in the eye of the beholder.
Okay.
Or in the eye of the pass holder. But this is... It ends today, just so you know. So you got to make your decision now. I actually wanted to talk to you about this last week, but you kept booting it. And so we're going to talk about it today, because today is the last time, the last day you can get this. Sale ends today at 11:59 p.m. Mountain Time. It is a Frontier Airlines Go Wild Pass. It's $799 a year. And it says, the headline on this actual, on the website says, turn your flexibility into unlimited flights. Did I?
Yeah, you've got my absolute attention.
Have you?
$800. Okay.
$799, to be specific, a year. And there's, okay, I want to. Here's the benefits, according to it. Now, I want you to seriously consider this. Are you planning on flying a lot in 2023?
I mean, for the right price, okay. Yeah. Normally, I would say no, because it's too expensive.
So, it's an unlimited number of flights, according to the benefits. Flights are available 300 days of the year.
Okay.
So, that tells you right there, it's not all year.
There's going to be some blackout dates, right?
It includes domestic and international destinations.
International as
on
well?
On Frontier Airlines. One low annual price for the pass for 12 months of travel. So you get $799, you pay that, and you get 12 months of travel on it. Get confirmed bookings the day before flight departure for domestic travel and starting 10 days before flight departure for international travel.
Oh, wow.
So
it's like the day before?
Yeah. Does that eat into your excitement?
Ooh, yeah. I mean, that big time, obviously.
If you were going to do this, if you were going to do this like individually, it would cost you $2,000 a year. So what are the catches? Let's see. Fine print. Let's talk about the fine print. You still get charged the taxes and fees.
Okay.
So I have this on Delta, like when I book a flight with my points, I still pay a little bit of money, right? That's taxes and fees. I think the last time I flew to Phoenix, it was like $11. Okay. I mean, it wasn't a lot.
But baggage?
Yeah.
Does it cover baggage? My guess is, knowing Frontier, because I've flown on Frontier, baggage is usually extra.
I don't know. Do we know for sure, Caitlin, if it covers baggage? We're looking it up. Caitlin, our producer behind the scenes, wildly typing.
I can almost guarantee baggage is going to be an extra cost.
Say that again, Caitlin. Okay. Flights are subjected to availability. Travel qualifies as... Okay, we're looking it up. Does it include baggage? You can only book the day before a flight departure domestically and internationally 10 days. Who can do that? You've got a job, dude.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think this is for me. But for example, say I know I'm going to take these 2 weeks off during the school year, right? I'm just going to take these 2 years or two weeks off. It's not going to be in the prime times, right? Mm-hmm. Outside of the blackout dates. I know I'm going to travel that time. Maybe I have some flexibility and say, I don't really care where you send me.
What if you get booted? Like, what if you call the day before and you get booted, though? I mean, I think you have to basically not have 2 weeks off. I think you have to have the rest of your life off. In other words, if you're retired, this is great. But if you just have this 2 weeks window and you're calling up the day ahead to figure out if you can get on that next flight, like let's say you decide to go to Nashville. I don't even know if Frontier flies to Nashville. They very well may. But you're like, oh, sorry, I can't get to Nashville. Now you got tickets to a concert in Nashville. Now you're driving to Nashville, dude.
Yeah, no, I think the point is you have to be flexible even where you're going.
Yeah.
Like here's a list of the 10 places you can go. Okay. So you'll have to be flexible saying, oh, okay, I'll just fly there. This always sounds nice.
So Caitlin says, she just checked into it, bags will cost, and so will, like, if you want a seat assignment, it'll cost.
Okay.
I still think this is a great deal.
That's an incredible deal.
$799. I'm actually contemplating it. Here's my fear. Tell me if I'm wrong. I know you will. It's like a ski pass. I've got my eyes wide open. I'm super excited on the first weekend, and then there's lots of people, right? And I can't. And I like, oh yeah, the food's kind of expensive up here, and oh yeah, I'm gonna. It's snowing. I mean, I love skiing in Utah, but this is how what happens with ski passes with me. Oh, it's snowing. I think I'll wait till a day where it's bluebird, and then before I know it, it's getting toward the end of the season, and I'm trying to figure out how I can ski that many days in order to make up the price of the ski pass. I'm worried that this would happen with this flight pass, but this is a great deal.
There's no question the deal is outstanding.
And I also think by having this pass, it would force me to travel. Because sometimes I'm a procrastinator. Yep. Believe it or not, for as much as I like to travel, I can procrastinate my way through a year without doing much traveling.
You can talk yourself out of it because, again, the flight is just a portion of the cost. You're still going to have to feed yourself when you're there. You're going to have to get a hotel. You're going to have to get a car. This certainly helps on the flight side of things. It reminds me, though, of MoviePass. Remember, I got the go to as many movies in a month as you want. And I forced myself. I went to more movies. It forced me into it because I thought to make it worth it, I've got to go to several movies. So I'd go to movies that I wouldn't necessarily have gone to otherwise.
Them?
Yeah, I did. It bankrupted them. Yeah, big time. I totally bankrupted them. Yes. Is the same thing going to happen? Possibly. Like if you have people, you know, hopping from place to place to place, you know, traveling several times a month, $800 is going to be a money loser for them.
All right. Let's take calls. 801-575-TALK. Do you mind if I ask this question? I'm contemplating this. I have to make a decision within the next 12 hours, probably sooner because I got to go to bed before midnight. Do I take the deal? Do I take the $799 fly anywhere on Frontier deal? 801-575-TALK. Either talk me into it or talk me out of it. Next.
Dave and Dujanovic.
Get a quick blast of news each morning.
From Ukraine to Utah County.
You'll hear it first.
And accurately.
On KSL.
Listen weekdays between 5 and 9 to Tim and Amanda.
Utah's morning companions for news.
Dave and Dujanovic.
I've just about talked myself into the $799 Frontier Airlines special. We're talking about this unlimited, all-you-can-fly pass from Frontier Airlines. I thought I was going to talk Dave into it. Turns out, I mean, Huntsville, Alabama, Indianapolis, Jacksonville, here I come.
Huntsville, Alabama.
Now, this the Frontier, actually, I wasn't expecting to find this on their website. They fly to a lot of places I love. Kalispell, Montana, right outside of Glacier National Park, one of my favorite places on the entire planet. Fort Lauderdale, I've been wanting to go, or Fort Myers, Florida, been wanting to go to Florida more often just to scope it out for retirement 10, 15 years from now. Chicago, wouldn't mind going to Chicago again. Also love Boston, love that city, wouldn't mind getting back to Boston. So I am slowly talking myself into it, but I don't have much time. This deal it expires tonight at midnight.
Right. This is not a paid advertisement. This
totally
is not,
not
a commercial. We just saw this, and it reminded me a lot of the movie pass, right? Where you could go to as many movies as you wanted. You could go to one a day, right? That's kind of what the...
And you bought the pass for one low, low, low price.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it was $30 a month, which is a lot.
It's cheaper than going and paying for each movie as you went, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'd have to go to at least three movies a month. I think they dropped it down to like $15 or something. But anyway, I was going to movies a couple times a week.
Like movies nobody ever heard of?
Oh, you've never heard of these movies that I was showing up to. But I felt like I had to make it worth it. That's what this flight is. You know, if you have flexibility, I look at it. I will pour gasoline on this fire, Debbie. I think this is amazing. you should totally do this because this is why. You just mentioned a half a dozen places off the top of your head.
Right.
If you don't really care where you go, if you have some flexibility,
yeah, which you know
just
I do,
jump on the flight and go. Yeah. I think it sounds like a great way yeah. to be able to fly around the country for very, very cheap,
and also like not be married to the outcome. And what I mean by that is, if I call on a Thursday and they're all booked up to Albuquerque, by way of example, I don't get my heart broken.
Yeah.
Maybe I decide I'm going to fly into Austin, or better yet, Baltimore, and then slide down into D.C. and spend the weekend walking my feet off to all the free things to see in D.C.
That's some of the fun of the adventure, right?
You're starting to talk me into it. How about our callers? 801-575-TALK. Should we start with Rick?
All right, Rick.
Yes or no? Thumbs up or thumbs down for me?
I say thumbs up.
All right.
How many times do you go to a all you care to eat buffet? You know, and you got to eat until you get your money's worth.
Yep.
You think this is the same thing?
Oh yeah, I would be flying all over the place. I'd find some place that I haven't been before and go.
I love it. See that. This is more gasoline, Rick. We're trying to look for a voice of reason to talk us off the ledge because we are skydiving right now. Doug in Highland, what do you think? Too good to be true, or is this the chance of a lifetime to just fly all year round? Doug, are you in Highland or Salt Lake? Where are you at, Doug?
I'm in Highland. Oh, okay. I can't hear you.
Oh, sorry. Can you hear me now?
Well, not on my phone I can't, but... let me just say this. You're one step above the standby passengers. It isn't going to cost Frontier all that much because if they have empty seats the day before you're going, the plane's going to go anyway.
Yep. Yeah. Sorry, I think we lost.
I travel a lot, and I find that flying standby... But if you're trying to make serious plans, it's a very difficult thing to do.
Okay, so you think I would struggle to you know solidify my travel dates, and I'd become frustrated by it. I was just looking up what it would cost me to fly. I usually fly Delta. I've just become used to that over the years. So I just looked up the Delta app. If I flew to Boston the first week, did I say that with a Bostonian accent? I think I did.
You did not.
I think I did. I think
Boston.
$498 round trip, $597 round trip. So just a flight in the beginning of the year to Boston. That's not even good.
Boston.
Between $500 and $600 on Delta. Now, I could probably find a better deal if I had time to sit here and root around on my app, but that gives you an idea kind of where I'm coming from. This is
how you do it, Deb. I've got it all figured out in my head because I know this is what you're going to do. This is your Christmas present to yourself right now. You find, you know, a dozen places. You plan out the trip, and then you just wait for that trip to open up. And then you're immediately, you know what hotel you're going to stay in. You know the rental car company. You plan it all out.
The system.
So as soon as that pops up, you get that great flight. You go. You do it. You have the experience. It's almost plug and play. You're good to go.
A different Doug. This one from Salt Lake, live on the line. You talking me into it or out of it?
Out of it.
Why?
The reason being, Debbie, is there's a lot of places where Frontier does fly, but you have to be careful because, like Cedar Rapids, Iowa, for instance, they only fly on Tuesday and Thursday.
Oh.
So there's some places where they only fly twice a week, or some places like Castell, Montana, they're only seasonal.
Oh, my goodness.
So if you're not in the season, you cannot fly to them.
Well, when they say seasonal, what I'm hoping you mean by that is summer being the season in Kalispell, because I love Glacier National Park and I love Flathead Lake and all those other places in Montana, but I don't love Montana in the winter. So
exactly.
Okay.
I just wanted you to know. I wouldn't want to be flying there.
This is why we crowdsource some of our questions, because these are things that you might miss. You might miss in the fine print. And I'm looking up Kalispell right now, Dave.
How in the world does Doug know the flight schedule to Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Yeah, you're like, you do know that that's only a Tuesday and a Thursday flight. I had no idea.
Let me look up Boston. Yeah, I'm having a hard time searching it. So maybe, here we go. There we go. I'm going to Boston the first week of January. I don't know. I'm having a hard time with that. Maybe. Yep. I guess I'd have to check into that more. But I've got a few hours. The deal expires at midnight tonight. We're talking about the Frontier Go Wild Pass, which is $800, a little less, a buck less than that. It's on sale till tonight, and it's unlimited travel. But there are, should we call them fine print things that you have to pay attention to?
Yeah. You're going to pay some taxes. You're going to pay some baggage.
Yeah, but I can't get stuck in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. I can't let this just be the Dave show because they only fly on Tuesdays.
See you next Tuesday, Dave.
Tuesdays.
I think part of it, and before you book, you'll know all this, right? You'll know when you can leave and when you can come back. What's going to be difficult is if you're trying to target a specific place and traveling on a specific date. If you have, you know, a week or two of vacation and you know you're going to travel somewhere, there's going to be a lot of options, right? If you're not picky of where you're going, if you don't want to go to a specific concert in Las Vegas, then I think you're going to be just fine. A lot of people cannot travel that way. It's just too much up in the air. Some people, I think you're probably one of those people, they would do fine if they dropped you off in the middle of nowhere. You're like the Bear Grylls of travel. You're like, whatever, man, I'll make it work.
Why are you calling me a loser?
Bear Grylls. That's the highest compliment you can give an individual.
You're so right, Dave. I just start walking. I would figure it out straight ahead. We're going to go back to China and the protests there. Calls for China's president to resign over their COVID lockdown policies, and there is an uprising there. Will it make a difference at all? Straight ahead.
Dave and Dejanovic, a new conversation.
All right, here we go.
On KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM at 1160 AM.
Return now to our developing story that we've been reporting all morning long, the protests in China. They're erupting in response to another round of COVID shutdowns. Like, where the rest of the world has moved on from COVID, not China.
Can you hear that? If you say Xi Jinping in a protest in China, you're going to end up in prison.
Yeah, they're taking huge risks. It makes me realize how fortunate we are in this country. When we protest, we can peacefully protest. We can chant. We can hold up a sign. But in China, it is a risk. But what I want to know is, one of the things they're crying out for is for their president Xi Jinping to resign over his lockdown policies. Let me tell you what it's been like there. From what I've read, this latest lockdown was a 100-day lockdown. And the zero tolerance policy is about COVID, not necessarily like the lockdown itself. So what the regime wants to happen is that cases remain at zero. And they're at 38,000 right now. So they're nowhere near zero. And you pointed out this latest variant spreading like wildfire.
Yeah, I was watching the Daily or listening to the Daily podcast, and they said comparing it to the original virus, the original mutation, this one that is out there right now, which is a variation of the Omicron, is 175 times more contagious. So it is, you catch it immediately. It's not a severe version, but the chances of you catching it are almost, I mean, guaranteed.
There looks to be thousands of people on the streets. Steve Bannister is the University of Utah Director of Master of Science in International Affairs and Global Enterprise. That is a long way of saying we hope, we think you're an expert in this. Good morning.
Well, good morning. How are you?
It's good to have you on the air again. So I don't want to pretend like I'm thinking the same way a lot of Utahns are, but when I woke up and saw that there was this uprising in China and it looked like there were thousands of people taking to the streets, I thought, Is there a chance they're going to get their president, they're going to knock him out of power? What are your thoughts?
Boy, that'd be a very difficult thing for me to believe. I just don't think that's going to happen. I mean, Xi Jinping he's boxed himself in by turning more inward and acquiring more power. Now, if something goes wrong, it's on him.
Right.
And you know, he is trying. I mean, I've thought a lot, frankly, about why he's doing what he's doing, and, you know, done a bit of research on it. He just seems like he's trying to increasingly differentiate the Chinese system from the U.S. system or the Western system or whatever else you want to characterize it. And this is one of the methods, one of the, you know, the benchmarks he's chosen is doing a better job on controlling COVID than anyone else. So, and this just blows this up in pieces.
Well,
so I don't know what's going to happen.
When I look at it in the way you described it, I would imagine that he would be able to say, look what's happening in capitalist America, and look how many people are dying and have died. But here in communist China, we don't even have one case. Is that the marketing pitch?
I think that was part of his intent, absolutely. And it's not just on COVID, but on many ways. As he turns more inward, more nationalistic, he's trying to find ways of differentiating himself from the Western world, to try to make the case that the Chinese system is superior to capitalism, or however you want to characterize the Western systems. And so he's got himself boxed in now that the population seems to be erupting. I mean, I don't think they've had anything like this since Tiananmen Square in 1989. And that was limited to Tiananmen Square in Beijing, right? And so it was easy to massacre all those people after a couple of months. I don't know what they're going to do with people all over China in major cities, you know, just protesting in the thousands, it seems like.
I think what this says is that, you know, you can keep people locked down for the greater good for a time, but you keep them locked in small spaces, and many of them are in apartments.
Yeah.
Eventually, people want to live their lives. And so in some cases, I'm reading that people were living inside the factories where they worked, so they didn't make contact with the outside world. I mean, who can live like that?
Correct. And this was apparently triggered by, there was an apartment fire somewhere out in West China that killed 10 people or something like that. And they were blaming, you know, the COVID lockdown on the how long it took to respond and try to get that out. So they ended up with dead people. But that was just the trigger. You mentioned factories. I think the Foxconn factory, you know, Foxconn is the assembler of all the Apple products. Mm. And they have a huge operation in mainland China. And I think their biggest factory, the employees were being locked down in the factory, and they rebelled. This was like several weeks ago now, 3 or 4 weeks ago. And they, you know, they broke out and they tore down the fence that they put around the place and escaped. So that seems like that was the beginning of, you know, the real rebellion to this zero COVID policy that Xi is trying to put in place.
Steve,
and it's going to be a tough thing. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, Steve Bannister. I just wanted our listeners to know that we're talking to Steve Bannister, University of Utah director over international affairs and global enterprise. And I wonder, in
the econ department, I'm a professor in the economics department as well. I wanted to get that.
You're going to stay busy. You're going to stay busy throughout the year.
Yeah.
What's the future look like for these protesters?
That's a great question. I mean, the only reference point I've got is, well, I mean, they've been cracking down in Hong Kong, right? After Hong Kong became free of Great Britain, finally, and when was that? 1999, I guess. Increasingly, China has cracked down, and they've included police actions. But I don't know that has been as widespread as this current mainland China uprising that seems to be going on. The only other reference point is, as I mentioned briefly, Tiananmen Square, 1989, and that was a couple months worth of student-led protests. Oh, I think it was over the killing of some student who was protesting the army or something. I forget exactly the details. But eventually, Tiananmen Square is this enormous central square in Beijing. I've actually been there. And it was full of protesters, and they sent in the military and massacred them. I mean, they killed, I think, several hundred. And that's been a real blot on, you know, on China's reputation internationally, and they've tried to move beyond it. Well, I don't know what they're going to do. Are they going to send the army? I mean, they have the capability. They have enough of an army, certainly, to do massacres again. And I don't put it past them, but I don't know. I just don't know. It's a great question.
Well, I think that is the real fear, right? Because we have seen this play out before in the past. And I think as we see the videos, and these protesters are not just chanting. I mean, they are throwing barricades. They are pushing back against the police. This is violence, right? They are more than just chanting. And I think this is where the world is looking at China, trying to see how they will react. Because if there's another Tiananmen Square, now that we have social media and we will see all of the videos, China won't be able to sweep this under the rug like they did.
Straight ahead, let's dive into the conversation about Gavin Newsom, governor of California, saying he's not going to throw his hat in the ring for president for the Oval Office if President Biden decides he's going to run again for president.
Dave and Dujanovic.
You can catch info anywhere.
But KSL News Radio is a dependable source.
We invite you to join us weekdays between 5 and 9.
Tim Hughes and Amanda Dixon.
Utah's morning companions for news.
The BYU Cougars are on the court.
Spencer, step back. Three.
Got it! Every Cougar game, every block, and every jam is live right here. Tuesday, it's BYU Westminster. Pre-game is at 6, tip-off at 7 on Utah's legacy home of the Cougars. KSL News. Dave and DeGenevieve.
2024's Democratic nominee may not be Gavin Newsom, the governor of California. He's at least given President Biden his word that he won't challenge him in 2024 if President Biden runs.
I want to see where his hands are at this point. Is he giving the old fingers crossed? Because it feels like a big old, hey, I'm not going to run, wink to your staff that clearly knows you're going to run.
And President Biden, it's hard to read him. It's been really hard to read him on whether he will run or not. But we do know that 94% of Democrats under the age of 30 want a different nominee.
Yeah, that's a massive number, and it's overall 72% of people. I saw that from a Marquette poll that says, yeah, we just want somebody else to run. Now, this was specifically to Biden. Trump's numbers kind of the same thing, but it's hard to see somebody else running other than Joe Biden and Donald Trump.
So, yeah, speaking of former President Trump, who wants to be – he wants to be your president.
He's running.
Yeah. So President Biden addressed former President Donald Trump during an interview with CNN's Jake Tapper.
Well, look, I'm not going to make this about my decision. I'm going to make this about this off your election. After that's done in November, then I'm going to be in the process of deciding.
Is one of the calculations that you think you're the only one who can beat Donald Trump?
I believe I can beat Donald Trump again.
But the question again is, his approval numbers are in the tank. I mean, they are 41% right now. They've been in the high 30s. He is not a popular president, right? Can he win? Should he run again? And if not, then is the Democratic Party going to challenge him?
Well, but also, like, the red wave that y'all were predicting. y'all were predicting during the midterms didn't happen. So maybe things are looking up for President Biden. But either way, let's bring James Curry, professor of political science at the University of Utah, into the conversation. Okay, there's so many questions here. We started this whole discussion talking about Gavin Newsom. So let's bring him back into the conversation, Professor Curry. Does Gavin Newsom, is he the heir apparent either way for the Democratic Party in your view?
No, I don't think Gavin Newsom is the heir apparent. I'm not sure that the Democrats have a one clear heir apparent anyway, but even if they do, I wouldn't peg Newsom as that person.
Why not?
I think there's a number of things here. I think one, you know, California Democrats don't necessarily have the appeal that the Democratic Party may want in middle America, right?
Right.
California Democrats are seen as very liberal, a little out there by people in some of these Midwestern states that the Democrats need to win and want to win in 2024, states that went for Trump and then went for Biden. And Newsom's going to have that attached to him if he was the nominee. But beyond that, there's a number of other, you know, there's a number of other factors at play, too. And part of that is just that Democrats didn't do terribly well in California in the 2022 midterms. There was a lot of press about how the Democrats underperformed in Florida and in upstate New York. But you could say the same thing about California, and that was with Newsom at the top of the ballot.
That's true. I mean, he was on the ticket. That's a great point.
Yeah.
So if he is not the heir apparent, Vice President Kamala Harris is clearly not the heir apparent either, even though you'd think that she would almost have the rubber stamp of the Democratic Party. What does that bench look like? Because I think we are kind of sitting here scratching our head. Okay, if it's not President Biden, if he decides not to run, then who are the most appealing candidates for the Democrats for some of those swing states?
I think you have to look at some of the sort of Midwestern governors that did well or have been doing well in those states for the Democratic Party. And I don't know that any of these people are potential 2024 nominees, because I think in all likelihood you're going to see Biden run for re-election. But if Biden doesn't, or 4 years from now when Biden's no longer on the ticket one way or the other, you have people like Gretchen Whitmer in Michigan, who just performed really well in her re-election, someone like Josh Shapiro, who just won resoundingly in Pennsylvania. You got to look at these governors in states like that, states that the Democrats know they need to win, and where you have people who've proven that they have some crossover appeal or appeal with independent voters as well, who could be the type of people who are next up when Biden and some of these other more elderly Democrats are done.
James Curry is a professor of political science at the University of Utah. It's not the first time you've been on the show. We enjoy having these conversations with you, Professor. I'm listening to what President Biden said on CNN, obviously before the midterms, and he said, "Look, I think I could beat Trump." How much of the beat Trump factor into who the Democrats put up, or whether the president decides to run again?
I think that's most of it. I think that's most of what will decide everything. And Biden has the ability to claim that he can beat Trump because he already did. He beat him in 2020. Biden has been pretty clear since 2020 that if Trump ran again, he was probably going to run again, because not only does the party see him as a proven winner against Trump, but Biden himself sees him as a proven winner against Trump. And so I think that's going to be number one. As long as Trump has the possibility of winning the nomination and being on the ballot in November 2024, that picking someone who can beat Trump, which means probably picking Joe Biden again, is going to be the way that the Democrats want to go.
This is interesting, because if there was a Biden-Trump, really a head-to-head again, it's a little different this time around, because now it's comparing apples and apples. We've seen what a term of Trump looks like and what a term of Biden looks like. Do you think the result is any different? Does that change the dynamic at all if it does end up being a Biden-Trump ticket again?
I don't think it'll be radically different. I think you'll see another really close election. You know, Biden beat Trump pretty well in the popular vote, but things ended up pretty narrow in the small number of states that gave him the Electoral College victory. And I think you'd expect that a 2024 rematch would look the same, where Trump and Biden would be fighting it out for narrow edges in a handful of states like Pennsylvania, Arizona, Georgia, Wisconsin. these states that have become sort of the swing states of the moment. And I can't imagine either candidate would dramatically shift the margins there, that you'd either have narrow Biden or narrow Trump victories across those states, and whoever collected a majority of them would be the president.
Professor James Curry, thank you for joining us from the University of Utah, Poli Science Department. Thanks for joining us.
Who's your bench if you're the Democratic Party?
Well, I was kind of surprised by what Professor Curry said. He said, you know, look at Gretchen Whitmer out of Michigan, yeah, the governor there, Josh Shapiro, who just won in Pennsylvania. I think he was the attorney general there before, but he beat really quite a Trumper in, I think it's Mastriano as who he beat. Mm. He was one of Trump's, you know, guys.
It's like, who knows these folks?
Yeah.
Maybe yeah,
there's
in the party.
Not,
yeah,
there's not a name recognition here.
If you
here,
walked
yeah
up to people on the streets and said, hey, who's the governor of Michigan? You'd get a blank stare. You wouldn't even know it's female. You wouldn't probably even remember that she was part of a kidnapping plot that was foiled. You know, so who is it? Some of our listeners have said Pete Buttigieg, who's the Secretary of Transportation right now under the Biden administration. Was he a mayor?
Yeah.
Before that in Colorado?
South Bend, Indiana.
Oh, why did I see Colorado? See what I mean?
Yeah, this is small. It's where the University of Notre Dame is. Mm-hmm. And he was, this is a very small.
Who is it, Dave? That's
area
where I'm just trying to think, like, the options.
No,
here,
it's,
and I can't come up with anybody.
Because if it's not big names, and Gavin Newsom is about as big a name as you can get in the Democratic Party, if it's not Gavin Newsom, if it's not President Biden, if it's not Kamala Harris, then who is it? You're asking the great question. No one knows because you don't have this home run candidate. Mm-hmm. I think the Republicans see Governor Ron DeSantis, as their home run candidate. They have President Trump, who they think is a home run candidate. Two people that have very strong followings that are going to be battling it out. I don't think you have that same energy and excitement on the Democratic ticket right now.
Straight ahead, before you click your payment this Cyber Monday, we got to talk about BNPL. BNPL. It is the hot new thing on tons and tons of online purchases. Buy now, pay later. I'm going to talk you out of it next.
Radio. Dave and Degenovic. A new conversation.
All right, here we go.
On KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM. Dave and Dujanovic are right on the money on KSL News Radio.
Can't talk about Cyber Monday, which is today, without talking about this thing that I read about in on CNBC's website, BNPL. BNPL.
Well, you did work for the FBI, so I know you love your acronyms.
Buy now, pay later. CNBC reporting that buy now, pay later payments increased 78% the week of Thanksgiving compared to the previous week. What you do with BNPL is the website at checkout gives you an option to divide your purchase into equal payments. So you make one payment now, and then the first is due like at purchase, but let's say you pay $200 for something, Dave. You're going to owe $50 in 2 weeks or 4 weeks from now, and another $50 2 weeks or 4 weeks, depending on how it's set up. So you pay for it. It's kind of like layaway, only different.
Because you don't have to wait till you pay it
all yeah,
off
it
before
right
you get it. You get it right away.
Up, right.
Okay. Yeah. Go ahead and spin it however you want, Deb. This is the same pig. Maybe the color of lipstick is different, but this is the same pig.
So I wonder if it's better than putting your entire purchase. Let me just mark myself with a pen. Ouch. Have you ever stabbed yourself with a pen by accident live on the air? That hurts.
Every single white shirt I own has a big old pen stain right
Don't
across.
Don't do it. I wonder if it's better than putting your entire purchase on a credit card with interest rates at an average of 18% right now.
Okay, can I ask you a question about your BNPL?
Yeah.
Is it interest-free?
Yes, sometimes. It can be, so you got to read the fine
print. Well, I don't want the sometimes.
No, it can be. Most of the plans I looked at are interest-free. Okay. They're interest free. Doesn't mean that if you're late, like for example, if they go, if you put it on a debit card and they go into your checking account, they try to pull the money out, it's not there. You will be dinged with a late fee of up to $10.
Okay.
But I'm here to talk you out of it. I'm here to talk you out of it because I think these, it's almost so good, like interest free sounds so good that you forget the, like, companies aren't really just trying to be nice to you. What they're really trying to do is get you to, in your head, negotiate into buying more. So I'm only going to $50 for this. I'm only going to owe $10 right here for that and a $20 for that. So now I'm within my $100 budget to spend today, but reality is going to sink in next month and the month after that where you keep paying.
Shane Stewart joins us right now, certified financial planner with DMBA. Shane, I call it same pig, maybe different color lipstick, but talk to us about buy now, pay later.
I like your analogy because it does smell like the same pig, right? In 1949, a guy named Frank McNamara, businessman, he forgot his wallet while dining out, and he was a little embarrassed. And so his wife, I think, covered the bill. But in 1950, he created the Diners Club card. It's a credit card. It was one of the first in the nation to do something like a credit card. This sounds a lot like that, where Frank McNamara could dine then and pay later.
Yeah.
And so just switch the acronyms, right, from dine now to pay later to buy now, pay later. But it sounds a lot the same.
I'm at a point, and look, everybody, I wasn't always at this point, Shane, but I'm at the point now where my credit cards get paid off every month. So if I don't have the money, and oftentimes, like, I bought a vacuum on a credit card this weekend, and I moved the money over right away as soon as it posted because it always shows pending. And I was always like, I just wait till it posts. But I pay it off right away. Wasn't always in that spot to be able to do that. And I'm grateful that I've gotten that. But I'm like 55, right? So, I mean, at some point in my career, I've been able to sort of switch that up. But I was one to do this. I did the layaway thing for years. I did the, you know, store credit card thing for years. And what I always found out is it was like by March, I couldn't even remember what I bought. You know, for Christmas on buy now, pay later or layaway or whatever the lipstick on the color of the lipstick is on the pig of the day.
Yeah. Yeah. And you hit something right there, Debbie, that I think is really key. The L in buy now, pay later. How much later? And if you're talking about a long time later, that's detrimental to your financial situation. If you're talking about relatively quickly, then that's not as much of a problem. You hit another issue that is really key here, and it's the interest rate. I'm with you, Dave. I want to know what that is, and you really do need to read not just the fine print but everything and make sure how low is that rate. If it's zero, then I'm even thinking of using it, right? Because it's and I'm cheap and a financial planner, but if it were zero for a period of time, I might use that as long as I know I have the means and the discipline to pay it on time and in the time frame that they've allotted for that 0%. Because usually when it says 0%, it's a fixed time frame. Once you pass that time frame, the interest rate picks up. So if you pay attention to interest, you pay attention to time, it might be something you could use, but you got to be careful.
Shane Stewart, thanks for joining us, certified financial planner.
And advice.
It is great advice, and it's important because, Debbie, so often you can just say no to everything, right? I mean, that's the easy answer. There is a way to work the system, whether it's credit cards, interest rates, leases, whatever it might be. There's always a way to work the system. What they are betting on is that you're not disciplined enough or smart enough to work the system.
The retailers win.
Overall.
We just keep forking out money for whatever reason. Maybe we feel compelled. We feel guilty if we don't. We feel like we don't want to be the parent or the grandparent or whatever that doesn't step up with 30 gifts at Christmas or whatever the occasion may be. But the retailers usually find a way to put us in a situation where we're thinking about doing this kind of stuff. I guarantee you, Dave, you'd buy now, pay later, even with zero interest, even for you, Shane Stewart, if you're still listening, you will not remember by the time that last payment rolls around in June or July what you bought and who you bought it for. And I just wish we would get to a point when we could say no to ourselves. I had a phone call. I know we got to run because we got more to talk about. But I had a phone call with my daughter. I was at Kohl's, literally in the towel section at Kohl's. I texted my youngest daughter, who's almost 23 years old. And I said, do you need new towels for Christmas? Can't think of anything else to buy her. You know Kohl's.
Yeah.
They have like a billion colors of towels. And
no shortage of towels.
There's only like $7.
And she's like, yeah, Mom, I would love a big stack of towels.
She didn't text me back. She called me. She called me right away. She said, Mom, stop. We need nothing. Nobody needs anything right now. So just stop. You can give us cash. But stop giving us cash and showering us with gifts. Do you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to believe her.
Give her cash?
I'm going to give her some cash. I'm not going to give her all my cash, but I'm going to give him some cash. But I'm going to believe him. Just stop buying. Stop.
And then take that cash and buy now, pay later.
Dave and Dujanovic. Get a quick blast of news each morning.
From Ukraine to Utah County.
You'll hear it first.
And accurately.
On KSL.
Listen weekdays between 5 and 9 to Tim and Amanda.
Utah's morning companions for news.
Okay, so obviously it's our favorite time of year to shop. Numbers are off the charts in terms of spending, not only on Black Friday, but the day after, and then also today expected to be 5% more money spent than last year. Here's the flip side of that. This is an in for scams. This is an in for scammers because we're so busy right now. We're not paying attention, and we're just to every little detail like we normally would, Dave, and we're ripe to be scammed.
I love deals. I love deals, and the more I want it and the better deal I see, my brain shuts off, Deb. My brain shuts off.
Okay, so according to Nord Security, more than a third of Americans, it's like 95 million people, have been scammed online. Dave is patient zero.
Yep.
Dave has been scammed online big time. Quickly tell the story, Dave, because I want to get with Matt Gephardt, too, of KSL 5 TV on this.
I couldn't wait to go to the Mumford & Sons concert. I was so excited about this concert. My son and I, we're going to go. It's going to be amazing.
Are you here in town?
Yeah, it was over at USANA. And I look up tickets. You know, they were $50 a piece. I'm like, that's fine. So I end up Apple Pay. Using Apple Pay instead of Venmo. That was part of the scam. Is Venmo, you can reverse the charges. You can't with Apple Pay. So I'm like, can I just Venmo it to you? He's like, no, let me have you said I only take Apple Pay. Well, yeah, because you're scamming me all along.
and know it.
Yeah, and I knew it. I'm like, this feels super shady as I'm sending him the $100.
And you never got the tickets.
Oh, of course not.
You couldn't find him.
No.
You could.
What was worse is, I said, "Hey, yeah. I didn't receive them." He's like, "Well, I didn't get your cash.
Oh, so he
send
lied.
Me some more."
Well, what was worse is that you disappointed your child. Matt Gephardt, KSL5's investigative reporter. Good morning. Let's use Dave as an example. I mean, a lot of parents out there probably looking for Taylor Swift tickets or other concert tickets for their kids for Christmas. I mean, that's an easy one to lose money on.
Yeah, I mean, any of it is. You're in good company, Dave. Yeah, more than a third of Americans, like you said, Deb. According to data that they shared with us from Nord Security shared with us, it's like 95.6 million people. But what was super bizarre about it was you'd think you'd learn, Dave. Do you feel like you learned from this, that you wouldn't make that mistake again?
I do. I do feel that way.
He hasn't learned a thing, but go ahead.
Well, that's the stuff that was, I think, most surprising about all of this is that even people who have been victims of scams and you feel like you've learned, they've gotten so sophisticated that people basically admitted that they would still, in order to try to score a deal, especially this time of year when, oh my gosh, I really have to have that hot item that my kid would just kill for, those Taylor Swift tickets, that's, I don't know, whatever the equivalent of Tickle Me Elmo is this year. Yeah, and it's like people like 7.6% who have already been scammed said they would hand over their Social Security number.
Stop it.
Why would you ever, when shopping, need to tell somebody where you worked?
Yeah,
well, I don't know. I just bought a car a couple of weeks ago, and I had to tell them where I worked for that, getting a new line of credit, I suppose. But, yeah, like this is all the kind of data that an identity thief – can use to really just make your life miserable for years. Your children's names, people would hand that over. A whopping like almost 90% of people who have been victims before of Dave's, of the Dave Noriega's of the world, said that they would hand over at least some sort of personal data to land a bonus gift, discount, or service.
We're brainwashed.
Did you say people would give their children's names?
Yeah. Yeah. And not just like a guy said that and we all giggled. It was 7%. So almost 1 in 10 of us, 7% said, yeah, I'd give my children's names to score a deal. The kind of stuff that, again, you what? Why in what world would you ever have to do it? But then you start playing out that game. Okay, well, maybe you're getting an Airbnb, and maybe as part of the Airbnb, you accidentally land on a fake website. And these are all the kinds of things that then these identity thieves can come back and target you with. We've heard about, like, the grandma scam, right, where they come and say, like, hey, this is Billy, and I'm a cop, and Billy's stuck in jail, and all of a sudden it seems real because they know people's names and stuff. And so these scammers have gotten really good at playing the long game.
So you're saying is you give up your child's name now, the potential to win, a $50 gift card at some mall store, wherever it may be, and what they're going to do is they're going to associate your kids' names with your name, and suddenly you're getting these phone scams in the new year from people who know your kids' names now.
Any number of ways. I mean, we could do 365 plus one stories a year on the leap years of the different ways these scams work and how they become really – they don't work. You know, the days of 20 years ago where they would just print out a bunch of letters from Publishers Clearing House or from the prince of whatever African country and blanket the whole country with that stuff, they figured out that doesn't work. What does work is calling Dave directly with something that Dave wants or showing up in his social media with that thing that they know Dave wants. And getting Dave to click on it, and boom, they got you.
Okay, so how do I find out what deals are legit, especially as we're living in Cyber Monday today? How do I know if these deals are legit?
Look, it's really tough. I don't want to do an advertisement for Amazon per se, but you know the reputable websites. You know if you shop on Amazon, it's going to come with the Amazon sort of backings. You know if you shop on Walmart, Target, those sorts of things. Short of that, I personally rely heavily on reviews. I look at a lot of reviews, you know, do they have 5 stars? I always go to the 1-star reviews to see what the people who complained had to say about it and how long, you know, and reviews can be faked. But, you know, if there's a couple of months or better yet, a couple of years worth, I feel like that gives me a certain peace of mind, are they a local company? Are they the kind of company, if they happen to be a Utah company, look, shopping local is great. And if you can do that, find a local company, even if they don't have a storefront. A lot of Utah companies are at least registered in the state. You can check with state agencies to make sure that these companies have gone through the process of actually getting their businesses verified.
Yeah, the Better Business Bureau. The Better Business Bureau. Look for complaints there. Look, I've just Googled the name of a company, and I usually put the word in complaints on the search bar with their name, and sometimes those complaints will pop up. But I also look at the reviews on products as well, Matt. And if it has like a couple of bad reviews, I'm like, okay, I'm not even going to go down that rabbit hole because I don't want to have to deal with it. But I want to just real quickly, and we're almost out of time here. There's so many, like you said, we could talk scams all day long, every day. But I woke up this morning, I do, you know, I went on to Amazon last night and I found 114 loads of Tide for $9. And I ordered, right? Merry Christmas, Deb. I ordered myself a year's supply of Tide. So I went on to check on Amazon this morning. Well, I went in my emails on my Gmail account, Matt, and sure enough, there looked to be this email, what I thought was from Amazon, and it was 4 a.m. So I was blurry-eyed. And if I'd clicked on that, as I took a closer look at it, it was a scam email with an attachment. And if I'd opened that thing up, my entire computer probably would have been ransomware by now. It would have
been
infected, right?
Be.
So make sure you're checking who you're clicking on when you're getting those emails, because we're in such a hurry to check emails to make sure our shipment's on the way. You just never know. I would have been in deep trouble this morning had I clicked on that, Matt.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you very much could have been. And the trick to that is hovering your cursor over the email, because you can make your email come from anybody you want. You know, my email comes from Matt Gephardt. But guess what? That's not actually my name. My name is Matthew Gephardt. And by the way, that's not my actual email address. My actual email address is mgephardt@ksl.com. So if you actually hover over the name that it came from, it'll give you the email address. And so just because it says, you know, Bed Bath & Beyond or Target or what have you, doesn't mean it actually came from a legitimate website. When you hover over that and all of a sudden you see it, it's like Bed Bath Scammers 1, 2, 3, 9, or 12, you have a pretty good idea this didn't really come
from
that company, right?
Don't click on the attachment.
I think I did catch a niner in there. Matt Gephardt, thank you so much, KSL investigative reporter.
Did you learn anything?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the fact that we get gotten and gotten again, like, it's not enough that we learn the experience and go through it once, that the scammers will re-scam the scammed.
We have a pending snowstorm. Maria's got all the details on that next.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.